Friday, partly sunny again with a high near 43. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 26. Saturday is a chance of rain and snow, but it'll be, says, partly sunny with a high near 43, and the chance of precipitation is 30%. Saturday night, chance of rain and snow, mostly cloudy with a low around 29, and the chance of precipitation is 40%. Well, if you believe all that, actually, they've been talking about, you know, chances of snow and so on and so forth. So we'll have to see. That's a little far away to be predicting. So welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged to be here today. This is NAMI's Hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We work out of our homes. We have no paid staff or no office. And I was told once a while ago that the commute from the kitchen to the family room is better than the commute on the highway. So, and I agree, it is. But what we try to do is we try to help people who either have someone in their family or they know someone or work with someone or friends with someone who have a mental health issue. And we do it in various ways. One of the ways is this coming February 22nd, we're going to have what they call a family-to-family class, which used to be 12 weeks long when my wife and I were teaching it regularly. But they've revamped it and updated it and put it down to 8 weeks, which is great. And it's going to be held at the Hunterdon Medical Center from 9:30 to noon. And you have to register, but you don't have to be a member of NAMI. And everything is free. All the binders, the paperwork, everything is free, but you do have to register. You can do that by going on to NAMINewJersey.org or Hunterdon County, Hunterdon Chapter, I'll get it right, NAMIofHunterdonCounty.org, and you'll see phone number, and you can just call the numbers there. We also run a support group the third Thursday of every month, and that's held at 52 East Main Street. It's from 7 to 8:30. Again, you don't have to be a member of NAMI. You don't have to register for that. You can just come. And if you have any questions or any questions that we can answer or help you with or whatever, 908-284-0500. 908-284-0500. We don't have someone man it 24/7, but there is someone who checks it at least twice a day, and we will get back to you as soon as possible. We are very privileged today to have with us, and he's smiling, we are privileged to have Andrew Meltzer with us today, and he is a special education attorney with the firm of Sussan, Greenwald, and Wessler, and whose practice focuses on advocating for children with special needs so they can have access to the education they require and deserve. Mr. Meltzer was a classified student who conquered his learning differences and went on to help special needs students to attain success in school and life that they are capable of. I have to say this, Mr. Meltzer has been named in the New Jersey Family Magazine Best Lawyers for Family, quote unquote, in 2019 and 2020. And we welcome you, and we're so pleased that you could join us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Larry.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Have you hear it, because like I said, what your firm deals with is great, and a lot of people don't know that there's organizations like yours out there that can help people. So I think that's, you know, great. And your firm's primary practice is special education law. So would you like to explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. So in New Jersey and around the country, children with disabilities or suspected of having disabilities between the ages of 3 and 21 are entitled to a FAPE, a free, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. And education is not just about academics. It's social, emotional, could be toileting, whatever a student needs to be as independent as possible as an adult. And it falls to the local school districts if a student either has a disability or is suspected of having a disability that adversely affects their educational performance and they require special education and related services, they're obligated to provide them an individualized education plan, or IEP. IEPs can be provided for a number of reasons. Could be a specific learning disability, could be a medical condition like ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Right.
And also there's a disability category called emotionally disturbed for primarily mental health, emotional health, atypical reactions to typical situations. So there's many resources that can be provided to students in school who are suffering from psychiatric issues, and I'd be happy to explain more about that.
Yeah, I just have a quick question.
Sure.
Do you find that some schools are more apt to help than others?
Unfortunately, the answer is yes. I'm not going to name any
school
districts.
No, I'm not looking to name any school, but I'm just saying, because I've noticed we've been dealing, well, I've been with NAMI, I guess, 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of times we'd like to make a presentation at the school or something like that. And some schools are just very open to it. And some, oh, no, we can't do that, blah, 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 you know. And so I was just curious, you know, since you're dealing with students and young adolescents and mm-hmm. such and young guys and girls, whether you find that that's true.
So it really depends, and that's unfortunately the best lawyer answer.
Right.
But there, in addition to schools that may not be as receptive, for example, they may try to discipline students for having emotional outbursts
right.
or behaviors.
Right.
That's not the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
When a
we
student
agree.
Has a disability, when those behaviors are what you consider a manifestation of their disability, in many circumstances, they're not to be disciplined traditionally, and that any sort of consequences need to be rehabilitative. But even if they're not having behaviors, because as we know, a lot of mental illnesses are invisible or they
mm-hmm.
happen internally, such as depression or anxiety.
Right.
There are many, many students suffering from that. There are a lot of services that can be brought within the public school. For example, counselors, mental health professionals from the outside. There are some schools that create therapeutic programs within the public school. And it's like it functions as a school within a school. Those students are there for part of the day getting mental health treatments such as individual therapy, group therapy, even family therapy. If they're having trouble getting to school, because a lot of times students become so anxious they refuse to go to school.
Right.
These sort of programs can right. send their staff to the house to address that. And then finally, if all of those things don't work, throughout the state of New Jersey and around the country, there are therapeutic day schools that specifically are designed to help students with emotional and psychiatric disabilities.
Right. I spoke to a counselor at one of those schools
mm-hmm.
In Hunterdon County, actually. And I can't remember the name of the school, unfortunately, but I know where it is. I can drive to it. And they help women and men, young women and men, who are either suffering from various problems. And it's not all mental illness. I mean, it can be, you know, problems with the home or, you know, family, whatever. But they deal with it. And it just seems to me that that's a great a great way to help youth of all, you know, shapes mm-hmm. and forms. Your firm, did you want to elaborate more about special education law?
Definitely.
Okay, go ahead.
In addition to what can be brought in the public school and out-of-district therapeutic schools, the next step up, because when you look at least restrictive environment, that's part of the law. It's defined as the environment closest to home where progress rather than regression or stagnation takes place. And that's different for every student. It's not always that the least restrictive environment
right.
is a general education class with neurotypical peers, because
mm-hmm.
if they're not able to function in that class, that's not the least restrictive for them.
Right.
So it runs the gamut. There's, like I said, there's public school, there's therapeutic day schools, and then there are even therapeutic residential schools, where if a student's academic and emotional needs are so intertwined that they cannot be separated and have to be addressed concurrently in a 24/7 environment, that's something the school district would be financially responsible for.
Right.
And obviously, everything on this program is not meant to be construed as legal advice. It's a case-by-case basis, but
of course,
everything here is meant to educate and to know
right.
what options are out there. The most restrictive educational environment is home instruction. That's when the school district sends instructors to the home to educate a student for a variety of medical reasons. That's not meant to be a permanent solution. In fact, the Department of Education mandates that every 60 days the request be revisited.
Mm-hmm.
So if a child has been home on home instruction for months and months and months, that's a cause for concern because there are often less restrictive environments than that
right.
that could meet their needs.
Right. And it's ironic because I have seen over the last few years more and more youth coming forward. And I know that in one of the schools there is a group called Stigma Free. And in fact, I had them, three or four of them, on the radio a couple times. And I think it's great. They've come to our NAMI meetings, and some of them, you know, are just have no problem per se, but they agree with their classmates and getting the word out and help. And I think that's awesome, you know.
It really, really is. And going to the topic of stigma is something that, you know, NAMI and also other families need to realize. It's still big, even though we've made so much progress. And what I always say, and something that a lot of these students need to know, is that to ask for help is not a sign of weakness.
Right.
In fact, it is the greatest sign of strength. And when you help students realize that and enable, and even adults and young adults,
sure.
to seek help, the chances of a recovery are much, much higher. And one of the right. things often we do in schools, a lot of times IEPs will say students will have the ability to ask for help for this. If they're feeling this, they can ask for that. A lot of students don't yet have the intuition or capability or right. so paralyzed by their anxiety to ask for help. So what we often do is we try to get check-ins established, certain safe spaces they can always go to, a discreet hall pass so that they can leave the room and go to their
right.
place where they can
right.
decompress. There's a lot of things that can be done that are more proactive rather than reactive, because a lot of these students, they won't learn those skills until they're given the tools to generalize it.
And one of the things that this Stigma Free group looks at is you're not alone. There's others that'll help you. Whether they have an illness or not, they will help you. And so you're not alone.
That's fantastic.
Know? And it is, you know, because they're not alone. You know, they a lot of times feel they are, you mm-hmm. know, but they're not. And by having others of their age group and what have you come out, you know, it helps. It really does. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908 284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provide sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody out there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're very privileged today to have with us Andrew Meltzer, and he is a special education attorney with a firm. Say the first one.
Sussan.
Greenwald and Wessler.
Wessler.
And they focuses on advocating for children with special needs. And we were talking about school, and your firm also deals with bullying in school, as well as certain other disciplinary matters. Would you address that, please?
Absolutely. So in New Jersey, there's something called the HIB law, harassment, intimidation, bullying. That's a special class of bullying, and not every instance of bullying rises to HIB level. But some of the important things to know are that every school has a HIB coordinator or bullying specialist. It's considered a HIB when the perpetrator intimidates or bullies or harasses a victim in a way that puts them into a discrete class. So if they're teasing them because they're short, or they react strongly to a situation, or they say, you know, you're stupid or you're handicapped, that's a discrete class that falls under the HIB law. There, in addition to, you know, what the definition is, it allows parents to file HIB investigations. They can request to do an investigation of the school. The school is mandated to follow a certain set of procedures, and it gives the parents and the student that's a victim a way to have their voices heard and to create conditions to make them safer.
How long has this been in effect, this law?
It's been a couple years, I believe.
A couple years? Okay.
And in addition, how disability law plays into this. So if the victim has special needs, that's something our firm helps with in terms of identifying what could be done to make the student safe in school. We also can look at the alleged perpetrators because they may have their own special needs that haven't been appropriately addressed by the school district.
Right.
And obviously if they perpetuated a bullying act, there needs to be a consequence. But if the reason is that they have a diagnosed or suspected disability and that what they did was a manifestation of their disability, traditional discipline is not going to help. It will only serve to reinforce that they're bad kids, and it may lead them to do it more. But when consequences are rehabilitative in nature and are done in a way to help them understand what they did was wrong and give them programming to help alleviate those disabilities and teach them, that is the correct approach under the law. And we, as a firm, serve both the victims and the instigators of bullying.
Right. It's ironic because there's a mother who's been on the show with me, and her son was in college and came out as gay, and he got tormented by, you know, online and everything, and to the point where he committed suicide. Mm-hmm. And that's why I was asking how long this law has been in effect. And this happened about 10 years ago. So, you know, but she has a foundation that she formed that, you know, tries to help mm-hmm. people who have this, you know, situation.
That's very important. And while there's always been bullying laws, it's really in the past couple of years, with what we've seen in the news, especially in New Jersey, with several high-profile cases,
right,
that the state as well as school districts are instituting tougher policies about bullying. But zero tolerance doesn't always work, especially if there's some sort of disability involved.
Right.
So it really has to be tailored to the unique circumstances of each individual.
And, you know, it seems to me that those that bully have a problem with themselves. That's why they pick on people they think they can get away with doing it with. Mm-hmm. You know, like I mentioned to you
pretty
about
much
what
always
happened. Right. And, you know, people are people. You know, when I talk to families and so on and so forth, I says, you know, underneath that illness, whether it's schizophrenia, whether it's bipolar, whether it's depression, anxiety, whatever, there's a person. Don't only see the illness. Look for the person that's under it, you know, because they are there, you know. And a lot of times when somebody bullies somebody, it's their way of just, you know, oh, I can be in the crowd then, you know, I can be accepted, you know.
Could even be considered a cry for help at times.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Again, nothing excusing what,
no,
what acts there were, but
no,
there's always something else behind that,
right,
that causes someone to act this inappropriately.
Right, exactly. Okay, you have something special you want to talk about?
Well, I think one of the things that we hear a lot about as a firm is what happens after an individual turns 18.
Okay.
When someone turns 18 in the state of New Jersey and around the country, they get vested with their full adult rights.
Mm-hmm.
That applies to both individuals that are neurotypical and individuals with disabilities.
Right.
The mental health realm has its own set of challenges after a child turns 18. When they're under 18, parents have a wide latitude of options they can do to help their child, and they always have the ability to advocate.
Right.
After 18, unfortunately, we hear this time and time again, especially when they go to the hospital and are not in the state of mind to advocate for their own needs, they try to cut out the family or someone they care about from advocating on their behalf. In fact, sometimes to a lot of these families, HIPAA is a curse word.
Yeah. And the individual may not sign the consent form that, you know, we've been fortunate because our son, who I was talking to you about earlier, he's always signed a consent form that we can talk to the doctors and so on and so forth. But a lot of people don't have that. A lot of families don't have that. You know?
And my family's been in the same boat. My my brother has a very severe mental illness, and it becomes very difficult to advocate when they're not allowing participation.
Right, right.
Ultimately, under the HIPAA law, it can be suspended when there is an emergency, such as a crisis hospitalization, but hospitals are very uneven in their implementation of that. So some of the things you can do to get around that as parents, one is a power of attorney that a child can sign where if they're incapacitated, then that person has the ability to advocate for them. Powers of attorney work when the child is cooperative, but they can revoke that power of attorney either verbally or in writing.
Much at any time, too, right?
Exactly, at any time. And then the hospital or medical staff's hands are tied.
Right.
That also ties to financial, too. One of the tools at a disposal, and it is a last resort, but it's something that families need to know about, is guardianship. Mm-hmm. That allows someone else, the decision-making authority for a person that has been deemed by the court as incapacitated under the law. And that will make HIPAA irrelevant and allow families to advocate. It's always a big discussion over whether guardianship is the right thing to do because, as we know with mental illnesses, there are peaks and valleys, especially with something like schizophrenia, where they can do very well for a period of time and then descend, medications need to be changed, the psychosis creeps back again. So guardianship is an assertive right, meaning that if an individual is doing well, you don't need to jump in. But if they get into a situation such as signing a contract for a car they can't afford, or they get into some sort of legal trouble, guardians have the ability to step in and invalidate certain contracts or certain decisions because a court has deemed them incapacitated to make those decisions.
That's something I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, because, you know, they figure they've got an adult child and they're disabled and what can I do? They're 24, you know, or 26 or whatever. Well, what you're explaining is they do have an option, you know.
Yes. And in fact, it's often better because the research shows that when families participate in the treatment of a loved one, their chances for success in recovery are much, much higher.
Right.
And one of the problems with the mental health laws the way they are today is that it's all a waiting game until there's a crisis. And there are so many opportunities to head that off before it descends into crisis.
Right.
And an individual will emerge with a lower level of functioning than before. And I always found it to be a dichotomy in the law because on one hand, there's all this talk about free choice. If an individual wants to suffer, you know, let them suffer, let them make their own decisions. But otherwise, why would we have a tool like guardianship that allows individuals to step in if someone is deemed incapacitated?
Right. Exactly.
And one of the things that often is said is that there is not a constitutional right to be mentally ill. And is someone really free if the illness is ravaging their mind and in many cases their body and preventing them from being able to make a decision, where if they got the treatment, they would be in a much better position to be independent.
Right.
So that's something that I hear often from families that are struggling through the system, that the laws just do not allow for enough early intervention, especially once someone passes the age of 18.
And I have found over the years so many individuals whose family has washed their hands of them and said, that's it, you know, I'm done with this, I can't deal with it anymore, you know. Well, I can tell you it's not easy dealing with it as a parent,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, we have four children, and like I said, you know, my son is my youngest son, and it's not easy. But who would he turn to, you know, mm-hmm. when he has that one second of realization, you know, who would he turn to if he had nobody, you know? And to see so many people without anyone in the system or mm-hmm. not in the system because they don't have anybody to vouch for them into the system
mm-hmm.
is sad. It really is. It's one of the things that NAMI tries to do to help, you know, people who have mm-hmm. no one, get them the right, either the right doctor or the right prescription or the right, you know, program to go to or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't act as their family because we're not, but to try to help them, you know, and when their family has given up on them. Or in some cases where their family is no longer alive and they have nobody mm-hmm. else, you know. And that's sad too, you know.
And that actually is something that our firm works on a lot as well, because a lot of parents think, you know, they don't really think about what's going to happen after either they retire or are unable to take care of their disabled adult child anymore. And that becomes a really big problem. You don't want it necessarily to fall to a sibling or some other relative that may not be prepared to do that. So our firm has a large special needs planning practice where we work with families in their estate plans to designate who would help take care of a child once they're gone or unable to take care of them. Another important thing is something called a special needs trust. That enables families to set aside financial resources for their loved one with a disability, to preserve those assets, to use it for their benefit, for their needs, and to maintain eligibility for governmental benefits, such as Supplemental Security Income and Medicaid. And one of the important things to know is those don't necessarily need to be funded right away. It could be funded at death, could be funded in installments. It's really up to you, and that's why proper financial planning, special needs planning, and estate planning is so important.
Right. Right.
One other thing I wanted to mention is that if any family member, be it a grandparent or someone else, wants to leave money to that disabled adult child, they need their will to say that it's going to go into that person's special needs trust. Otherwise, without proper planning, it goes directly to that person, and then it can cut off their Medicaid and thus assistance. That's a conversation that any parents of a child with a disability needs to have with any family members that are considering that.
Because they have to have less than $2,000 in their
account.
If they have $2,001, they lose their benefits.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, so yeah, the special needs trust is amazing for, you know, we have one, you know, but it took us a while to realize that that's what we needed, you know.
Precisely. Another important tool is called the ABLE account, Achieving Better Life Expectancy.
Right.
And that allows about up to $15,000 a year to be set aside. It's much less restrictive than a special needs trust, but it can only put a limited amount in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another tool that's available to families if they need to set up something quickly in order to get Medicaid eligibility.
Right. And you can set up an ABLE mm-hmm. account anytime.
Online.
Online, yes. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you can do that even if you have, you know, your son or daughter or whatever has a special needs thing. They can – whoa, hello. I just knocked the microphone. That's what you heard.
Jersey. We talk with our hands.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm from Brooklyn, so they definitely talk with their hands. But, you know – it's something to look into. You know, it definitely is.
Definitely. Know. And for my parents, for example, they have special needs trust set up as well as an ABLE account. So that way, if we need to help my brother in terms of an unexpected expense, we have that ability to do so and have money set aside, and it won't jeopardize whatever benefits he's entitled to.
Right. Exactly. You also assist families obtaining services from the Division of Developmental Disabilities, correct?
Absolutely.
And would you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure thing. There's a lot of talk about what needs to be done in schools during special education, but one of the least talked about issues, and it's finally getting attention now, is what happens after they age out of special education. In New Jersey, you get special education until you graduate from school, or if you can't be reasonably expected to graduate after 12th grade, you get special education through the school year in which you turn 21.
Right.
The Division of Developmental Disabilities serves children or young adults and up with intellectual, developmental, or both intellectual and developmental disabilities from ages 21 and up. It's a large continuum of services, could be therapies, could be supported employment, job coaching, day programming, and even up to residential placements, a wide network of residential placements. It's not always for psychiatric reasons, but if you have a developmental disability, intellectual disability, and a psychiatric diagnosis, and they often do go hand in hand.
Right.
If you can prove that the developmental disability is what drives everything, you can be eligible for DDD funding. DDD is funded through Medicaid. So by getting SSI and Medicaid, that enables individuals in certain cases to be eligible for DDD services.
Okay. And that also plays into assisting students or young adults dealing with mental health issues, correct?
It can. The issue is that if they have a developmental or intellectual disability as well, a lot of times with children with autism, for example, they have anxiety or they have some sort of intermittent explosive disorder or sensory issues that go along with the autism. Those can be taken care of and given therapies within DDD, but it's not the psychiatric diagnosis alone that can qualify for DDD services.
Okay. And I know that, you know, your law firm deals with all this. Is there anything we're skipping that you deal with that we haven't talked about?
Sure. One of the other things is that for individuals with behavioral or developmental disabilities, and that does include mental health, below the age of 21, there's something in New Jersey called Perform Care. That is through the Department of Children and Families. They work with parents' insurance to bring services into the home. That can be helpful for autism. That can be helpful for psychiatric diagnoses, behavioral disorders. In addition to services like therapies, they also provide respite care. And they also provide, in certain circumstances, out-of-home placements to help stabilize individuals.
Oh, all right. Would you just elaborate a little bit? I know what it is, but a lot of people may not know what respite care is.
Sure. So respite care basically parents operate, especially when they have a child with special needs, they sometimes feel like they're running a daycare center just for one. I've heard a lot of medical professionals and psychiatrists have said that even to my family as well. And having respite care enables other qualified individuals to watch your child for either, you know, an evening, a certain amount of days.
Right.
There are certain locations and special needs camps even where that provide respite care that allow the primary caregivers, usually the parents, to be able to get away or take a break from their caregiving.
Right, right. And trust me, you do need a break from it.
Yes, and that actually that's something I want to give a shout out to for all parents of children with special needs. It's not just about finding the solutions for your children. It's also about getting help for you as individuals.
Right.
Having a child with special needs can be rewarding, seeing the progress, but it's also so devastating. Parents go through periods of anxiety, of guilt, thinking that they've failed.
Right.
But in reality, they're doing everything they can. So I always tell parents, you have to make time to take care of yourselves, be it therapy, exercise, meeting with other parent support groups. It's not enough just to get services for your child. Just
right.
like with an airplane, you have to put on your own mask first
right.
before helping others yeah. to get
exactly.
what they need.
And that's what I tell people that I deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go through every day and not have a small period of time for yourself. And I'll tell them, even if it's 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
if you like sitting on the deck and looking at the stars, do it. If you
Sounds
like reading,
nice.
yeah, you know, if you like reading, read, you know, if you can do it for longer, that's great. But, if, you know, 15 minutes or like you said, exercise, you know, take a walk around a block. If that's, you know, if you live in a development, you can walk around a block. Where I live, it's 2.5 miles when you walk around a block because my wife walks around a block. But, you know, it's just do something that you enjoy to keep you focused, you know, not only on the illness that's in your family, but your own well-being.
Correct. And oftentimes with mental illness, it doesn't affect just the individual. It affects
right.
the family. And sometimes
the whole family.
It affects the family more than the individual because if an individual is in psychosis, they may like what's going on because there are certain things in their
right.
head that are giving them joy even though it's debilitating them.
Right.
And the family has to sit wringing their hands seeing them suffer when
right.
it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
So for parents and caregivers to learn coping skills is going to make them so much better at what they do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We have to take another break and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hunt and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hunt and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on Hunterdon Chamber Radio.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very, very privileged today to have with us Andrew Meltzer. And he's a special education attorney with the firm of Sussan.
You got it.
I got it. Well, one out of four. Sussan, Greenwald, and Wessler. And their practice focuses on advocating for children with special needs so they have the access to education they require and deserve. And you wanted to talk about something, right?
Sure. So a lot of families, when they're thinking about long-term planning for their loved one, especially when they have a mental illness, developmental disability, any sort of disability, is what do I do after I'm gone? Where are they going to live? There's a number of different options for disabilities across New Jersey. The most well-known is the group home, which is about four individuals in a home, staffed 24/7, with staff grouped according to similar levels of functioning.
Right.
There's also supervised apartments where an individual will have either their own apartment or be with a roommate in a complex with staff available 24/7. Then there's supportive housing where they live completely on their own but have help available 24/7. And then it steps down, so on and so forth. One of the things that I've seen is that when it comes to housing for the psychiatrically disabled or someone with a very severe mental illness that can't be monitored or that has to be monitored 24/7 or have some high-level supervision, there's a woefully inadequate housing supply out there for them.
Yes.
While there are group homes, it's often they're referred to by state hospitals, which means the individual has to get to such a crisis in order to qualify for that housing. Otherwise, they're on the wait list for years. And one of the myths about mental health is that people think, oh, if my child or adult child is not violent, I can't get them help. That's wrong. In fact, one of the biggest tragedies of our mental health system is that there are oftentimes many individuals that are at home not participating in society that are in a way invisible. And it's not that they're causing a problem, but their illness is such that it renders them unable to function. Right. In other words, a grave disability. Some states have standards that enable the state to give them help if they're in that way. New Jersey is in between. But going along with that, there's plain and simple, not enough housing for these types of individuals. And if they have some sort of supported or supervised housing that can work on building their level of independence, that's so important. So, I mean, for any legislators that are listening or would listen, one of the things that could be a good model for New Jersey, the Division of Developmental Disabilities has a wide consortium of residential options and supports that can be brought within the home or in the community for individuals with disabilities, including housing. By looking to that model, but applying it to individuals with primarily psychiatric illnesses, that could be a great way to set up more housing around the state. There really needs to be a much bigger change. There needs to be more funding. And while I'm fully supportive of community-based housing, what's happened is after A lot of the mental health institutions were closed down. There was supposed to be funding for a whole system of community-based residences. Congress never followed through on those funding. And I can tell you that mental illness is one of the biggest drivers of disability benefits, SSI, Medicaid. And it's really a shame, because if more support was given to housing, to giving families more options to advocate for their disabled loved ones, they can get to a level of independence much, much faster.
Right. I know my son went through, he went through Easter Seals, 24/7 guidance counselors there, 12-hour, 8-hour, 4-hour. Finally, he was allowed to go into a home where Easter Seals would come once a week, and they could either take him shopping or whatever. But he and another fellow lived in it, and there was two other guys next to them. It was a side-by-side type thing. And from there, he went to his own apartment, which he's been in for, like I said, a little over 8 years now.
That's really great, and it shows that with the right supports, you can step-by-step increase someone's level of independence and get them more fully functioning in the community, because that's what they need and deserve to be able to do.
Right.
Because, as you said, there's a person behind that mental health condition. They're more than just their illness. But having these proactive systems and really applying it to a state level is something that the legislature really needs to develop more funding for. Because ultimately, the staff in this state, New Jersey is blessed in terms of its medical institutions, the types of doctors it has, the cutting-edge research that's being done.
Right.
And these individuals that really pour their heart and soul into working with individuals with severe mental illness need to have more authority under the law, as well as more funding to be able to provide even more services. And one thing I also wanted to mention for families that are struggling is there's something called PACT, which the ACT stands for Assertive Community Treatment. Every county has an organization like that, and they can come out to the house to assess an individual. In addition, every county has a mobile response team, and I encourage families to talk to them. They're available 24 hours, and NAMI's very good about spreading the word about that. If you're unsure of if you should call, if your child needs to go to the hospital or not, you can always speak to them, and they can lend a helping hand.
Right, right. And, you know, it's New Jersey has a lot of good systems to deal with people with mental health issues, a lot better than some of the surrounding areas. But we're not 100% yet either, you know.
Correct.
For example, like housing, you know. And if organizations don't have housing like Easter Seals to supply for their thing, to supply individuals, where do they go? You know, that's the problem, you know. And it's like, you know, and it just reminds me of Hunterdon County, supposedly one of the richest counties in the, you know, in the country. Mm-hmm. And people say, "Wow, there's no homelessness in Hunterdon County." Really? Want me to show you where it is? You know, like, because there's tents behind, you know, places. There's people living in trailers that are not theirs, you know. And it's sad, you know, because they need housing. And a lot of people living in these places have a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And actually, something that's keep in mind is that mental illness, as NAMI knows very well, doesn't discriminate.
Right.
And it's across all socioeconomic spheres. So there are individuals and families that are below the poverty line all the way to millionaires that are struggling with the same thing. The same statistics apply. 1 in 5 adults.
Right.
And so even for families that have a lot of material means, they can't afford to do what needs to be done. So it falls to states and other charity organizations to take up that slack. But with New Jersey, with our scientific background that the state is so known for, with our world-class universities, Rutgers has an excellent program for first episode psychosis, called Coordinated Specialty Care, which does an amazing job. But they can only take so many individuals at a time. And having the early intervention is key to helping individuals turn around when they start experiencing mental health issues.
Right.
Getting these sort of programs across the state combined with housing, it's not meant to control an individual's life, but it's meant with these sort of stepping stones, they can reach levels of independence right. and hopefully make a full recovery.
Right. If someone wanted to reach out for more information or schedule an appointment, how would they reach about you or your firm?
Sure. So we are based in Cranberry, so we're within 90 minutes of the entire state of New Jersey. We're in Hunterdon County all the time for various cases. We're in central, northern, and southern New Jersey all the time. The easiest way to reach out is to call our office, 609-409-3500. You can email me at andrew@sgwlawfirm.com. You can reach out to NAMI as well. They keep a list of different special needs attorneys in the area. But ultimately, I think it's always worth an ask to find out what's available because you may be very surprised.
Right.
With all the problems in our system, there are dedicated people out there. There are services that can be done. And with the right support and the right strategizing, you can often get to a better position than what you think. And I think to families, the important thing is to not lose hope.
Right.
Because lives always change. You don't know how an individual is going to change over time. Mental illnesses ebb and flow over time. So if a loved one is in a crisis right now, it's important to have faith that things can get better. And by taking care of yourself as a caregiver while also helping your loved one, it gives them a much greater chance to succeed.
Right.
So if you ever have any questions, I'm more than happy to speak. And our firm also, free of charge, is always happy to speak around the state.
And if you could give the phone number and the email again?
Sure, 609-409-3500. And my email address is andrew@sgwlawfirm.com.
Andrew, I can't thank you enough for being here.
My pleasure.
And the time just flew by again.
It did.
And I will have to have you back, you know, down the road.
I would be more than happy to do so. I mean, the important thing is to get the knowledge out, get the word out.
Get the word out.
And everyone in the firm has both a personal and professional connection to the field. We live this. We've been through this process or we are going through this process. And one of the things we always say is we didn't ask to be in those situations, but if we can use that ability to help better the lives of others along with our own families, it's all worth it.
That's right. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come up.
You're very welcome.
And we will reach out to you again and, you know, have you back.
Happy to do it.
So in the meantime, one more time, the phone number?
609-409-3500.
And your email address?
andrew@sgwlawfirm.com.
Andrew, thank you again so much. And, you know, we really appreciate all you're doing.
Thanks again for having me.
Thank you. See us again next week, same time, same station. Remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
A college education, you don't have to go into debt before you even begin.
The actual price of a college education today could cost more than $200,000. Even if you don't qualify for financial need-based assistance, Premier College Funding can help you and your family cut college costs and find efficient ways to pay for college.
Call 908-788-3799 for a free consultation or visit us online at premiercollegefundingllc.com. Getting a college degree doesn't have to break the bank.
North Korean officials over the weekend. Pompeo described the talks as productive. Meanwhile, North Korean officials described the U.S. as having a, quote, gangster-like mindset when it comes to denuclearization. Retired four-star General Jack Keane says there's one thing people need to remember when it comes to dealing with the North Koreans.
Actually, the social aspect of it, something we don't talk about too much because we don't see it, is also pretty important. And sometimes decisions are made in social settings, to be quite frank about it.
Four more boys from that Taiwan soccer team were rescued today from the cave, bringing the total to 8. Now, the rescue operation has ended for the day in Thailand. As of right now, we're not hearing about the health of the 8 boys who were rescued. Tropical Storm Chris in the Atlantic Ocean is expected to strengthen into a hurricane by Tuesday, although it is staying away from land. This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery, and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered, too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
A judge rules against a purported church in Michigan in a case involving pot. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill says he is pleased that the First Church of Cannabis will not be able to use marijuana as a sacrament. The Marion Superior Court ruling against the church, which had filed a lawsuit against the Attorney General's office under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The court found the church doesn't practice a true religion, but is just a group of marijuana activists.
Six former Ohio State wrestling coaches defended Congressman Jim Jordan today against the accusations that the lawmaker ignored complaints by the abuse of a team doctor when he was an assistant coach there. Jordan spoke out as well regarding the allegations.
I mean, I never saw, never heard of, never was told about any type of abuse. If I had been, I would have dealt with it. Our coaching staff, we would have dealt with it. These were our student-athletes. A good coach puts the interests of his student-athletes first.
This is USA Radio News.
When posting on most job sites, you get candidates.
I'm the sales director.
I'm the sales director you're looking for.
But when you post on Indeed.com, you get the candidates just right for you.
I'm a sales director with an MBA, over 10 years experience, who's also fluent in Japanese.
With Indeed, you can add screener questions for a less time-consuming route to your short list of qualified candidates.
Arigato.
Hiring's better when you've got your short list. Save time on hiring when you post a job on Indeed. Get started today at Indeed.com/hire.
Tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, President Trump will announce his Supreme Court nominee pick. We're hearing the president has it narrowed down to four names. Former Arkansas governor says it doesn't matter left or right. He only wants one person serving on the Supreme Court.
I tell people all the time, I'm not interested in the president appointing a conservative justice because I don't want the person to be ideological. I want him to be a constitutionalist, somebody who is pure to the original words and text of the Constitution. If a person comes with an ideological bent, liberal or conservative, then they're really going to be looking at things as if to legislate from the courts. We have a legislative body. It's called Congress. The judicial branch has no right whatsoever under the Constitution to legislate anything, to originate a law, and we need somebody who will be a purist when it comes to the Constitution. I hope the president sticks to that. I think he will. I think the names that are on his list are people who are committed to that.
Tropical Storm Chris is now spinning in the Atlantic Ocean. With more, here's USA Radio Network's Wendy King.
Located 160 miles south of Cape Hatteras in North Carolina, Chris is packing 45-mile-per-hour winds and could strengthen into a hurricane soon. Chris is expected to remain well offshore, but could cause rough surf and rip currents along parts of the East Coast. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Within a decade without raising taxes. This is USA Headline News.